And many were thinking of fresh baked chocolate chip cookies coming out of the oven. Or perhaps if you're a country boy as I am, you are looking fondly and remembering the smell of fresh cut hay. Or perhaps the incoming rain as you can smell it approaching. Well, I am convinced that this lectureship, as time passes, will be something that causes us to smile. As we pull the books down off of the shelf and as the tapes travel around and we view them, this lectureship will be something we look back on fondly. And I know for myself that every time I look at the material presented by Brother Gale, I will see his earliest picture. It will be in my mind, dude. And so as we think about this lectureship and the effect that it has, we must say that it is a good work. It causes us to smile. To our lectureship director, I say, well done. To our elders, well done. To every participant, those who have spoke, those who have worked behind the scenes, well done. And so as we turn our attention this morning to the subject at hand, what parents owe their children. When I received the assignment, I thought, I've got this made. So I went and I sharpened my newest pencil, looked for my Big Chief tablet, went off on Sunday morning to the high school class, went into them, and I said, all right, class, what do your parents owe you? Anticipating to actually burn the lead out of my pencil with the response, I merely looked back into blank faces. So then I rephrased it. All right, children, what do you expect from your parents? Then the floods of comments started coming. And really, a high school class is sort of one that if you can ever get them started, then you can hardly get them to stop. But sometimes getting them to start is a rarer thing than hen's teeth. So as we think of the comments that came toward me, they immediately said, food, shelter, and clothing, new car, my driver's license the minute I turned 16, a phone in my room, internet access. And so they immediately went through some of the more material things that oftentimes we simply associate with our children. But then one of them said, all we really need are parents. Parents. Now, it is so strange that when this topic came, what parents owe their children, I never gave any thought to that. But our children now are looking for parents. They want parents. And it was never made so clear unto me as I remembered a conversation that was held at our dinner table. A young lady, an acquaintance of our daughter's, she was having supper with us one evening. There we are, gathered around the table, as our custom was and is. We prayed before our meal. We ate. And her response was, in the 18 years of my life, this is the first time we have ever prayed and had everyone present at the table. I said, well, how do you usually do things? And she said, we fix our plate, we go to our rooms, we finish eating our meals, we come back, we put our dishes in the sink, or if we are eating off of the infamous paper plates, they simply go in the trash. We go back to our rooms, And the interaction that is so accustomed at our home is absent. To many people, parents and children alike, the biblical example and principle of the home is not only unthinkable, it's absolutely unrecognizable. And so, what's the problem? The trouble with lectureships is, while you sit out in the audience as a preacher, your mind starts to run. A particular speaker will say something and your mind goes and you're just wondering, okay, I got to get back with this fella. I need to get back where he's at instead of continuing to jot down my notes. But in one of the lessons I particularly remember, my mind went to Hosea 5:10, where they had removed the ancient landmarks, and because of that, the wrath of God was going to come down upon them. That is what has happened in America. In the home, we have removed the ancient landmarks that God set in place. And God is eternal. God ordained marriage, so therefore those landmarks are what? Eternal. 2 Timothy 2:2. We usually use this verse as we talk about the progression of the gospel from one generation to another, and we should. The things which thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, commit thou what? Unto faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. And we see that the gospel goes from one generation to the next, and that's how it continues. But as we bring this thought and we apply it to the family and the home, if my grandparents taught with clarity and knew with clarity the foundations of the home and the landmarks which God held, passed those on to my parents, and if my parents did not pass them on to me as clearly as they were passed on to them, then as I proceed to pass them on to my children, we will see that the waters simply become muddier and muddier and muddier. So now we are at a point where we ask ourselves, what are some of the problems, some of the ancient landmarks that have been removed from the family? At the top of the list must be the epidemic of marriage, divorce, and remarriage. It's an epidemic. If we could inoculate, as we did for measles and smallpox and so forth, the line for vaccinations would be so long, it would stagger our minds. People blatantly disregard God's law concerning marriage, divorce, and remarriage, which is clearly found within the pages of inspiration. And when you turn to Malachi 2:16, we are simply told and forcefully told that God hates putting away. And still, without any regard for their children, for their souls, for themselves, husbands and wives will just, for any reason, separate themselves. Another epidemic is the fact that parents spend so much time earning a living that they forget that the most precious thing they have on earth is their children. Stories told of a young man who was waiting for his father to come home. Perhaps you've read this. His dad comes in and the son asks him, he says, "Daddy, how much do you make an hour?" To which the father irritatingly responded, "Son, I make $20 an hour." The son then says, "Well, Daddy, can I borrow $10? The father continued to become more and more agitated at the questioning of his son and the things that he was asking. And he was in essence saying to him, "Son, I'm not going to give you $10 where you can go out and buy some toy or something and just misuse it. Just go to your room." obediently the young boy did. So after a while, the father begins to calm down. And he thinks, well, maybe he really wanted this money for something important. Maybe he really wanted to be able to, you know, buy something for other family members. And so he went into his son's room and he said, son, perhaps I was a little bit too harsh on you a little bit earlier. And he says, I would like to give you the money, which the young boy just sat up in his bed and was just happy and grinning. And he said, good. And so he reaches under his pillow and he starts pulling out crumpled up dollar bills. Once again, the father becomes angry and he says, why do you want money? I'm not going to give you $10 for you to use it trivially. Which the son responded, I've got $10. If you'll give me 10, then I can buy an hour of your time. As we think about the home and the family, we have in our country, people are trying to convince us that same-sex marriages, as we've already discussed in other lectures, is acceptable. Liberals of every stripe are trying to convince people that this is possible and acceptable, and if they can't convince you, they'll coerce you. When the ruling came down back, I believe it was in June, that the Supreme Court had overturned the law in Texas concerning sodomy, I told the congregation at Fruitvale, I'm not a prophet, nor am I a prophet's son, but we have just had the floodgates opened wide. And sadly, that has proven to be true. I think it's interesting that when you look in Ephesians 6 and verse 1, it says, children, obey your parents. The very next verse says, honor thy father and thy mother. In seeming like ironic anticipation, our Father has anticipated where people would try to blur the distinctions and move the landmarks of what actually makes a family. It's a father and a mother and children, not two women or two men. So parents owe their children parents. Have several points I want to cover here very quickly. First of all, our children never asked to be brought into this world. That's a decision that we made. We wanted to have children. We wanted to experience that. And sadly, many are not loved. They are not protected. They are not cared for by delinquent parents. Not just fathers. Delinquent parents. Mother and father, who shirk their duties. They try to satisfy their children with giving them the material things of the world rather than giving them what they really need. And our children deserve parents who truly understand they are precious. Children are a gift from God. Psalm 127 and verse 3, they are His gift to us. And I need to understand that my children are precious. I have the responsibility, myself and my wife, to train them up in the way they should go, Proverbs 22:6. I am to raise them or nurture them in the chastening and the admonition of the Lord, Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4. But they are precious. Children also deserve parents who are not overly concerned with being their friend. God has given to parents authority. Genesis 18 and 19, the Bible tells us that Abraham commanded his children that they would keep the way of Jehovah. Our children have enough friends. They need parents who will make the hard decisions that need to be made. You're not going with those people. You're not going to that place. You're not dressing that way. And that is our responsibility. Children deserve parents who are devoted to each other. Before the children ever came along, my wife and I made a commitment to each other. And God said in Genesis 2:24 that the husband and wife are to be cleaved to one another. They are to be cemented together. And yet how many times have we seen children effectively divide what God has joined together? We went to our local mall. Right before the 1st of April, my 12-year-old son's birthday is April Fool's Day. So my wife and I decided we're going to go and purchase him a new bicycle. And in our little old small community, we have about 700 people. If you've ever been through Fruitvale, you probably missed it. Because we don't have a stoplight, we have a flashing light. That's all there is. But in our community, the kids ride their bicycles to school. My son rides his bicycle. So we decided he needed a new one. The Ian McCann and the Kevin Johnson bicycle repair shop had gone out of business. So he needed a new bicycle. So we went to the local mall. Or as you would know it, Walmart. And while we are there, I'm in the section, and a father is there with his son of about 5 or 6 years old. And he is petitioning his dad over and over again to buy him a certain item, and the father keeps telling him no. To which the young man gave up and said, "I'll go ask mommy." Now what do you think the father did? Okay. If you're going to do that, I'll get it for you. As he turned and looked at me, I was standing there looking at him, and I'm looking at that boy, and I'm looking back at him, and I'm thinking, who is in control here? Who's guiding this family? This boy had a history of saying, if daddy won't do it, mom will. My children have tried it. And so have yours. But my children have gotten themselves in more trouble for trying to array mom and dad and set mom and dad against one another than perhaps any other thing that they've gotten trouble for in their lives. When daddy says no, that's no. When mama says no, that's no. And it's not up to me or my wife to undermine the other's authority. And we need to understand that. And our children certainly need to understand that. And children deserve parents that love each other. The Holy Spirit does not accidentally record the loving, tender interaction that is to exist between husbands and wives in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 22 and following. It is there because it is there where our children are able to see that their parents love one another. And in a home where hateful animosity and bickering and fighting between the father and the mother exists, what sort of lesson are we setting for our children to learn and to follow? Some people thrive on conflict and having controversy. A young lady who tragically lost her life. She fought the demons of alcohol in our community for years. And if you knew the whole story of her family, it would absolutely break your heart. She fought the demon and lost. My wife studied with her for a period of about 2 years of just ongoing studies. She told my wife on one occasion, she said, "Things are going so good. I don't deserve it." And within the week, she had left her husband once again. It is true that sometimes we are our own worst enemies. We need to display to our children that we truly love our spouses, and we are understanding of the distinctive roles within the family and how that the father is the head of the house and he is to love his wife as he does his own body. And as has already been mentioned, when a husband fulfills his role, he won't have trouble trying to have his wife be in submission. She will lovingly do so. My wife is a tremendous helpmeet, and I guess she thinks I need more help than I do. Constantly, I'm getting little things in my emails from her, little lessons and poems and thoughts, and she sent me one, and it was fitting. Perhaps you've seen it yourself, but the husband had finished his book, The Man of the House. And he comes home, and by the time he's reached his home, he is sort of enraged, and he goes in, and he storms in, and he walks directly up to his wife, and pointing his finger in her face, he says, "From now on, I want you to know I'm the man of the house. My word is law. I want you to prepare me a gourmet meal tonight. And when I'm finished eating my meal, I expect a sumptuous dessert. Then after dinner, you're going to draw me my bath so I can relax. And when I'm finished with my bath, guess who's going to dress me and comb my hair?" To which the wife responded, "The funeral director." Now, as we think about our home and the fact that we are to be loving and devoted to our spouses, we love them. We cherish them, and my wife completes me, and vice versa. I complete her. We balance one another out. That's the way it ought to be. That is God's plan. And children deserve parents who share the responsibilities of parenting. We think about Judges 13, verse 12, in anticipation of the arrival of Samson. Manoah and his wife asked the angel of the Lord, "How shall we order the child? How and how shall we do unto him?" Parenting is such a serious charge that I will seriously take all the help I can get. And so we need to have children, or our children deserve, first and foremost, and if we don't provide them with anything else in this life, our children deserve parents who love God. Everything else I've said is absolutely vain if they do not see that their parents love God. And that is the greatest question of all. You remember Matthew chapter 22? Jesus was asked that question, "What is the greatest and first commandment?" And what did Jesus say? "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, mind, and strength. And a second likened unto it is, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." We need to clearly demonstrate to our children that we love God. Because another thing that one of our young people stated to me in the class that morning was they needed worthy examples. Now you probably are wondering what this is. No, I'm not like one of the denominational preachers, and I think I'm going to burst down into a sweat any moment and going to have to mop my brow continually. This is simply, to the minds of so many, a hand towel. But I love to barbecue. My wife, she seldom cooks from this time of the year on because I love to put things on the grill. And I love to grill them. And so when I grill, what do you think I have in my back pocket? A towel. Stays in my back pocket, and as I am tending to the meat that I'm cooking, if my hands become dirty in any way, I wipe them on the towel. When my son is 12 years old, One day, as I was cooking, I came in the house to get something, and my wife said, "You better be careful." I said, "Why?" She said, "Look, my son had a towel in his back pocket." I'm thankful it wasn't a beer can. I'm thankful it wasn't a pornographic magazine. I'm thankful that it wasn't a cigarette. I'm thankful it wasn't a lottery ticket. So many things I'm thankful for. She was right. We need proper examples. Bible study. Could it be that in our homes, this might be the most urgent need of all? Time to study the Bible. Family devotionals. Times when we've sat down and we are together and we are studying the Bible and we are making that time for our children to ensure that we enable them to be armed, ready to face the temptations and trials that are going to come their way. Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed. Rightly dividing the word of truth is not only for the assembly, it's for the home. Through thy precepts I get understanding, therefore I hate every false way. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. Psalm 119 and verse 105. My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. Hosea 4:6. These words which I command thee this day shall be upon thy heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in the house, and when thou walkest by the way, when you lie down and when you rise up. You shall bind them. You bind them before a sign upon thy hand, and they shall be for frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the doorposts of thy house and upon thy gates. Not an area of their lives were not touched with the gospel, the truth of God's word. How we need parents who will be faithful in their attendance. Other than special occasions such as this or gospel meetings, how many hours a week are provided for your children in our regular assigned assemblies? If you're like us at Fruitvale, there's 2 hours on Sunday morning, Bible class and worship assembly. 1 hour Sunday night, and approximately an hour on Wednesday night. 4 hours. What does that leave? If I did my math right, and that may be questionable, there are 168 hours in a week, are there not? That leaves 164 hours in a week for your children to be bombarded and attacked, and they are, by every form of ungodliness. And if we seriously think that 4 hours is going to balance out the other 164 hours, we are sorely mistaken. We need to have Bible study in our homes. We need to have faithful attendance at the Lord's church. When the saints meet, we need to be among that number. Gathering, looking. The psalmist declared, "I was glad when they said unto me, let us go up unto the house of the Lord," in Psalm 122 and verse 1. I remember so fondly as a child, quote unquote, going to church. Of course, we know by that we were going to worship. With our common phraseology, I looked so fondly for those times. People will miss the assembly of the saints for things, and time does not allow us to examine all of them, but they will miss the assembly of the saints, but the same serious illness will never cause them to miss work or a ball game or a civic meeting. And our children see this. Mother says, or father says, I've got a headache. I just cannot go. And I understand there are times when we are prevented from going. I'm not saying that there never comes a time. But when we are habitually doing these things, and yet our children see us rise up on Monday morning and having the same difficulties, we trot off merrily to work, what sort of message do we send to them about the importance of the Lord's church? Our jobs, our civic clubs, their ball games are all more important by our actions than the Lord's church. We need Bible study in our homes. We need faithful attendance at the assemblies of God's people. We need to have an attitude of seeking the lost. Where our children hear us singing, oh, how I love Jesus, rescue the perishing, and on we could go with the songs we sing, but do they actually see mom and dad involved in evangelism? Going out and talking to that neighbor, mentioning that co-worker, inviting someone into our home, feed them a meal, sit them down around the table when we are finished, and sit down and open up the Bible, and try to get them to see that Jesus loved them. He died for them. Forgiveness of sins is possible. Hell can be avoided. And heaven can be embraced. Our children need proper examples. Helping the needy. The sick. The needy will be with us always, and we are to be ready to do good unto all men, according to Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10, especially unto the household of the faith. I can remember the first time I carried my daughter, my oldest daughter, who's now 22, with me when I carried a bag of groceries to a needy family. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with taking our children in proper situations? And I will quickly add that there are some our children do not need to be exposed to. But what is wrong with taking them when a family has lost their home or they need to be put up in a hotel for the night, and so we meet that family there? What is wrong with taking them and telling them, this is what we're going to do, and letting them experience and practice benevolence? There's going to come a point in time when they're going to have to take that task upon themselves. I want my children prepared. Be ready to meet the needs of those who are in need. Participation in a teaching program, and I don't guess there's a congregation anywhere. If they are, they are extremely rare. That don't have problems getting enough teachers. Seems like at Fruitvale the same people teach over and over and over again, and God bless them. But if a picture is worth a thousand words, what sort of lesson do we set before our children when they see mother and dad preparing for their Bible class? And then that, as they arrive at the building for the Bible class hour, they see their mother and their father as they go, and they go into their classroom. They have seen the importance of the Bible teaching program in the Lord's church. When our children grow up, what do you think they're going to want to do? The brother before mentioned the fact about how that his greatest desire was he wouldn't have enough room for all of his wife's teaching aids. Well, I've had to buy a new file cabinet for my beloved wife. But not only did she make her own copies, she sat down with my children, my girls, and made them a set. What is important to us, we participate in. What is not important, we don't. That's as clear as you can possibly make it. Another thing a young man told me was they need discipline that's effective. Now I understand that we are to spank our children at times, and the good Lord knows I received my fair share. But also know that when you look at the Bible, it says if you withhold the rod of correction from your children, what do you actually display? A hatred for them. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive it from him. Father of one of our members passed away, and the father was not a member of the Lord's church. So we were out with the family, and they were reminiscing about their father, and the member of the church, he was recounting how his father was a strict disciplinarian. And he told his son on more than one occasion, he said, as he was about to spank him, "Son, if this hurts me more than it does you, then I know I'm not doing it right." And we know the old adage that is said, you know, this is going to hurt me more than it does you. And in some ways it does. And yet his father had a unique sense of humor. And he said, if it hurts me more than it does you, then I'm not doing it right. But not every act of disobedience demands a spanking. Sometimes taking their TV away from them, TV privileges, or remove that Xbox. You want to send a kid into shock. Remove their Xbox and take their games away from them, their Nintendos. Take away some privileges. I've been in the school system for years, and I've seen children, and year after year they get spankings, and it has absolutely no effect. The Bible talks about people who can callous their hearts. Well, I know some children who have some calloused backsides. They've been beat so much, it doesn't matter to them. They can go to that office and take a spanking and go on, and I mean, it rolls off them like water off the duck's back. But you tell that same kid, you can't drive your pickup on school property for a month, and you have suddenly got that kid's attention. We have to have effective means of discipline. We are trying to accomplish what? The definition of discipline is that we are trying to educate, to train, to instruct. And there must be a variance, an effective variance in our discipline merit, in our disciplining methods. Very quickly, time is gone. Love that is genuine. If I love my children, I will provide for them in four areas. Physically, socially, emotionally, and spiritually. And you can look through the manuscript if you desire to do so, and you can find the points that are made there. But we cannot dismiss these four areas if we are going to be effective parents and give our children what we owe them, what they deserve. For those are the same four areas in which our Lord and Savior Himself increased. Luke 2:52. Jesus was one that was able to socialize with his peers because he was one that was socially able to do so. We need to provide ways for our children to interact with their peers. Oh, how we love to have interaction. We are social beings. One of the greatest things about lectureships is we get to socialize.